Hey everybody, welcome to Myopia Movies. This week, we are talking about Rollerball. No, not the classic one that has something to say. This one is shot in, well, 8 minutes of night vision. It's got Chris Klein. It's bad. Oh, it's bad. And there's also a lot of strange nudity, which for a PG-13 movie is a lot of nudity, in fact. Enjoy, I guess. We were mostly confused by this movie, so, you know. Who knows? Thanks for everything you do to keep us on the charts, and we hope you enjoy. Please review wherever you get us. Bye.
Welcome to Myopia Movies. This week we're talking Rollerball 2002, the movie that reminds you you can't keep Rebecca Romijn in a top. I'm your host, Nick Hoffman, Riffer on Cineprov, and on panel we've got...
and author Matthew W. Quinn, who hasn't heard the word lugeing in 20 years since they saw this movie.
Kieko.
Alex Ewald, first time on the show.
First time, long time?
Long time, yes. Yes. I was subscribed for a while.
There you go.
Yeah.
And?
And Edward Chanette, currently on Cold and Far Teal, here virtually, hopefully audio, visuals, all of it.
Yeah, I'm not recording you at all. Anyway... no. So we are talking Rollerball 2002. This is a sci-fi kind of future, kind of weird alternative.
It's like the X Games meets Hunger Games in Soviet Russia.
But it's not Soviet Russia. It's very specifically the Russian Federation.
Post-Soviet Russia. Shoe still wears you. They drink because they cannot tolerate my jokes.
They do need to bring this game back. Yep. Like, I don't know. Football, there's...
there are no rules in this.
Yeah, do you guys think that if countries just did this instead of having wars, that it would be better?
Nah, it might spill into the streets and be even worse. I don't know.
I mean, now... I will say, based on some recent football injuries I've seen, this might be safer. But, you know, we'll get there. This is truly something. I don't know what it is, per se. But while we're here, Matt, do you want to give us a plot synopsis?
Okay, so the movie starts out with our bland hero. What was his name again? Jonathan was the character name. The actor is nothing.
Chris Klein.
Yeah, the actor is nothing to write home about. And he and a bunch
He's
of his
in
buddies.
Steve Magnolia's currently.
So he and a bunch of his buddies are lugeing, which I remember a bunch of X game video games. I was in middle and high school where lugeing was a thing.
Lugeing still exists.
Do people still?
Well,
is it popular?
Street lugeing still exists.
So they're actually doing this on a street, like with like cars driving by and. And they could just at any moment be hit by a car. Like somebody could be driving, you know, their kids to school and run a...
kill a child?
Who's like on like a lie down skater thing.
Or go through a Chinese restaurant's window.
This is insane. I mean, and he's like, we got to get out of here. Yes, you guys are nuts. Also, this has nothing to do with the rest of the movie at all. Other than, I would guess there was a test screening where they're like, why for he leave America? Nope. And they're like, well, what if he nearly kills 400 people and nearly dies himself? And then they were like, sure.
So
he had sex in that movie 2 years ago.
LL Cool J has, you know, saves him from the cops. He's like, my flight leaves tonight.
And he just happened to be there, like driving his car around when...
yeah, he just took that turn when he was coming around there.
That was very fortunate.
What was the camp at the beginning with just a bunch of young people living in vans?
Oh, I mean, what
is this?
Foot Clan from Ninja Turtles?
I mean, just a bunch of young extreme dudes sitting around waiting to get recruited for whatever this thing is, street lugeing for $250.
Yeah, it was supposed to be $400.
Supposed to be $400.
It was supposed
to. Someone explain to me what lusion is in general. It's a suit of like Eva's Guard skateboard laying on and plat.
Well, based on the Academy Award winning film, Cool Runnings. lusion is a one person bobsled, but you're essentially sitting on like a sled on a single, like, on like two skis by yourself. Just it's exactly what it is. This is just the street version of it. And if you watch the Winter Olympics, I mean, these people must have brass balls and hopped up on something. Cause...
Street luge is an extreme gravity-powered activity that involves riding a street luge board, not a skateboard, a street luge board, down a paved road or course.
Well, remember, in the early 2000s, the thing was, how can I be as much of an asshole as possible before someone dies? Because, like, it's like the Mighty Ducks. Jackass Mighty Ducks. They do the rollerblading through downtown San Francisco, or Anaheim, excuse me. Like, that's just what it was. I mean, to be fair, Michael J. Fox may have killed more people than anyone, because he rides on top of a, behind a car in Back to the Future, and on top of a car in Teen Wolf. And so many kids did that. That's why they didn't have a sequel to The Breakfast Club. The way my brain works is just scared, Alex. I know there's not camera footage of this.
Trying to make connections.
But he went into epileptic fits.
So the street lugeing is in many ways safer than skateboarding, and a street luge only costs from $1,000 to $2,000. Cheaper if you make your own.
And he loses his street luge in the process of...
And he's upset about it.
Mm-hmm.
He loses the luge.
And did he win? Who won? It was unresolved. They just all split. It's done.
They scanned.
It's finished.
I think he was the last man standing, but I don't think he made it to the finish line because the cops were cutting it off.
Yeah.
Right? This is like, you know, when you watch Reddit and people are like, are trying to skateboard when the cops are there, and the cops like stop their board and they go flying. Like, this was the end for him had, you know, our hero not shown up.
Are you...
But you're... That's something I'll let you did.
I mean,
I don't know, like, when the land all over the sea, I don't think speed is how speed really is in this movie.
Is this in San Francisco?
Yes.
Got it. Maybe it's those hills.
Yeah.
They can go from 70 to 102 miles per hour. This is all coming from the internet, so I don't know. I mean, this could be all lies about, you know, from street luge conspiracist people.
I played Super Duper Dave. I don't know if you guys are familiar with
Super Dave Osborne.
Yeah,
of course I know Super Dave Osborne. I love Trev.
People, look him up. He was, I guess, I don't know. He was Jackass before Jackass. You know, before the
kind of like Blippi.
Yes.
I don't know what Blippi is. But I know Super Blippi.
Because you have not reproduced yet.
Okay, I got you.
Yeah.
Thanks.
You're welcome.
Oh, Bob Einstein, Super Dave, right?
Yeah.
I got it.
I've been watching By the Curb.
Yeah.
Very good. So Matt, take us to Kazakhstan.
Okay, so in Kazakhstan, no, Borat will not be showing up tonight. Maybe. Jonathan now becomes like the great hero of rollerball, a sport where you're riding around on a circular track, kind of like motocross, wearing rollerblades. At least one team member's on a motorcycle, and you gotta go airborne and throw a miniature bowling ball into a big metal pan
hard enough to make it ignite,
ring
fire
bell or something.
Yeah.
And so there's a bunch of evil post-Soviet oligarch types, one of them being played by Jean Reno, who decides, you know, the bloodier and more violent it is, the higher our ratings. So they start like having people sabotage each other and mayhem ensues.
So just as a brief aside, Noor, why did you choose this movie?
This was actually one of the first movies I watched. I got the pick out of Blockbuster for real. They had a Blockbuster deal, you know, two movies in one day. That was a thing. And I think I just watched Deep Blue Sea, so I had a fascination with how LL Cool J would act. So I saw my like, cool, he's on the poster. Oof, that guy, I can't watch that movie, but I can make a sneak way say it's sports. And I just remembered the actual game itself, as Matt kind of described it. It was like rolling roll derby mixed with, I guess, with motocross, with shot put bowling and that kind of stuff. Yeah. And I just remember the game being really fun to watch. But I was a kid, and I actually rewatched this recently. Smooth's kind of, but you know, it's kind of cool to me. And I know that this is something that you know, you want to always revisit. And I just wanted to see if this movie held up, and it does not.
I was just curious because I also must have seen the poster 1,000 times. Like,
right.
It doesn't make sense. The poster is very strange, and I don't even think they wear those outfits the entire movie. They wear something that looks like it. It's like that's the test footage, kind of.
Right.
But by the same token, they don't explain the game. Now, this is probably more for people like me and Alex, but did you recognize the commentator?
I
do. WWE, I forgot his name.
There you go.
I did not. The actor's name is Paul Heyman.
Jones,
right?
Look-alike.
Yeah, well, I mean, his name is Paul Heyman.
I was not familiar with him. Is that a wrestling thing? I'm not a huge wrestling guy.
His mama's coming home crying.
He's okay. the guy that's basically there to explain the movie. Well, maybe they added him after the fact. They were like, oh, none of this makes sense. Let's get somebody to explain.
I like the cursory explanation of the game. And then he just basically capped it off with, all you need to know, they're going to throw a big metal ball at this big gong thing.
Yeah.
It's going to do something. They score points. Is it 1 point? I don't know. How does it work? The workings of the game are clearly secondary at best. I couldn't follow anything going on when the action scenes were actually happening, but we got a cursory explanation.
No, I mean, and part of it is the joke, so to speak, I guess you'd say, is that, I promised I wouldn't do this, so I'll just explain it incredibly briefly. This is based on a movie from the 70s starring James Caan. And in it, like Running Man or something, the government is taking huge advantage. It's the 70s. This is post-Watergate, right? Like, the government's taking advantage of us. And the way they distract us is the old Roman bread and circuses. We're going to entertain the people. And they realize that the game is incredibly corrupt. And the person who's supposed to win is supposed to be in the part of the country that needs votes for. So it motivates the people. Yeah, very corrupt. Okay, fine. And then enter James Caan, who's our main character, Chris Klein, but with charisma. And he is good in a way that the game is not predicting. His team is not supposed to be winning, but he's so good that the country's behind him. They want him to just win, and he ends up, you know, punching Nixon in the nose. Like, it's one of those kinds of things. And the whole thrust of it is, oh, could you imagine in 1975, Hank Aaron is being paid $250,000 a year. Could you imagine spending that much money on an athlete? Athletes are now making more than the president, right? Like, we're throwing billions. I mean, and now, of course, 2023, we're spending billions of dollars of stadiums that never break even. Happy Bobby Bonilla Day last month, where he's still being paid over $1 million a year and hasn't played in 12 years because of how big his contract was, and he won't be the last. And so, like, that's the satiric point of the old movie. All of that is gone. Like, this is like, if there was even, like, an evil, I mean, I threw out Ted Turner earlier just because that's what I think of him as, but like an American guy who wants to buy it out and bring it to MTV and put it on the X Games, that would be motivation, but there's none of that here. It's just like, hey, you know what? Rebecca Romijn is going to be naked in a scene. Like,
it's like, I think they're doing some of the bread and circuses thing because like all those miners are watching it.
Yeah, yeah. They're appeasing them. They're entertaining them. They're making them be okay with the conditions for this game.
Yes.
I can say I can see how this movie would be really cool for like a 12-year-old kid. Like, I can see that.
Right. And there you go. And it's funny because, Nori, when you were describing it, you said, I remember the game, and my first thought was, holy shit, was there like a GameCube game of this? Because that would be fun. You threw out, it reminded you of like roller derby. That shit is so much fun to watch. And they have funny names. Like, that's the whole thrust.
I just remember there was like a Tony Hawk game I remember having where you could skate or luge or do this or that.
I have it now.
Pro skater.
Tony Hawk Pro Skater. Which also has a good soundtrack, which I will say, I did like this movie's soundtrack.
I mean, it was 2002, and it took me right back to high school.
Yeah, I was a fan. I was like, every song that came, I was like, oh yeah, I would buy, Yeah.
There was a scene of Slipknot performing in the bowels of a Mongolian sports arena, which, I mean, I think it's how they got their start, pretty much. That was great. They just show up, alongside the people going in to play the game, and there's some very poor people eating, like, you know, sludge out of bowls, and there's Slipknot playing, of course. That's natural.
Well, I mean, it's just... you know how the Beatles played the Cavern Club, German strip clubs for thousands of hours. They got their 10,000 hours.
The Mongolian rollerball circuit. Of course.
Well, you got to think about the time this movie was created and the movies around it. 2000, well, like, The Fast and Furious came out, 2000?
Yep.
American Pie, 1999, that's somewhere around there. Triple X, all these kind of high octane,
cool,
whatever. You know, they just wanted to make that next big hit.
Yeah.
And again, the only thing I remember was that they were super fast cars. They were girls, boobs, locker rooms, whatever. I mean, again, 10 years old.
Wait. Go ahead. Yes. No, yeah, sure. No.
And so I will say this, and also this was also like a post 9/11, so. Yeah, I guess they wanted to bring things back into the Soviet Union and away from, you know, I feel like this movie was made not knowing if, like, you don't want every country on blast. Because yeah. I think on movies after this, they were just like, if there was terrorists, they had to be from, like, the Middle East. You know, this is one of the very few ones where, like, it's not. It's just, I guess, society, the government, capitalism.
So first, two things. This came out in 2002, like you said, right after 9/11. I wonder if this wasn't in some sort of development hell. Because if you told me this was supposed to come out in 1998 or 2000, I'd believe you. Because it feels much more, in some ways, pre-9/11. You'd think that...
Right.
Because, like, the idea of saying that corporations or even all that stuff, I mean, always the case. It's fine. Like, we go back to Soylent Green, for God's sake. But at the same time, this feels oddly pointed in a way that they don't tend to make. Like, Jason... Like, the first Bourne movie came out the next year. Like... That's what I think of action post-2000. The other thing that just blew me away, this movie is set in the far-off future. This is 2002, mind you. So the far-off future of 2005. Now, if you're going to pick a future, at least a decade, my friends. Don't do the near future when it's like, you know how the Russians and French are totally evil and taking over the world with media? Yeah, that's the problem. Every time I turn on the TV, there's a fucking Russian program on.
Well, they had to look at the budget, you know, and get, like, futuristic phones and stuff, and they decided they couldn't go that far in advance, so they had to...
All the Russian characters who don't die in this movie end up running troll farms.
No, we will be mining Bitcoin! I will also say, in a world like this, with so many cool fucking helmets... Where was Daft Punk? It's 2002. If they were the musical group and they had even better helmets?
I think Daft Punk was, like, coming out. Like, I'll be honest with you, I thought when I first heard Daft Punk, I thought they were something of, like, the 70s and 80s and stuff, because the way I was looking at the music videos, but they came out, 2000s? So they would have just, like, started getting popular. But I'm just reading some things in regards to this movie. Like you said, Nick, it was in development hell. There was, like, a lot of reshoots. The first script was focused on the social commentating of it. The first cut, they had to cut down on the violence and the nudity. So there was even more nudity and violence than what we saw.
I will say, just for a second, because that reminds me, nothing says sci-fi future like co-ed naked locker rooms.
No. Everyone's cool with it.
Everyone's cool with it. And it's funny. I don't want no way, like, it's a trans debate now or whatever, but it's so funny how, like, you could tell it's a sci-fi future. And I've mentioned this before. Back in the day, the way you could tell it was the future was when you had a black president and then Obama ruined it, right? But in the 90s, it was always like, I'm Morgan Freeman, and it turns out there's a meteor coming for Earth. And it's the president, you know it's the future, because there's a black president. Can't do that anymore. I'm glad that co-ed locker rooms where women are just walking around naked, we can still tell. 3 years into the future, everything has been settled. It's cool now. 2005. Go ahead, Noor.
Oh, no. I just wanted to put something. So there was actually controversy with this film. Like I said, there was a lot of production issue. So in 2013, the director, John McTiernan, was sent to federal prison for making false statements to an FBI investigator in February of 2006 about his hiring of the private investigator, Anthony Pelicano, to illegal wiretap Charles Rosen, who was the producer of the film, around August 2000. In 2014, had an investigative disagreement with Rosen, who about what type of film Rollerball should be, and then hired Pelicano to investigate Rosen's intentions and his actions. So, I don't know. I guess what we got was just they wanted to, because the movie essentially, how much was the budget? The budget was about $70 million, but it only made about $25 million. So I guess it was probably released to, you know, count as a loss for the tax reasons. I don't know what movies studios do that.
Not as much as they do now, because that was something I think that changed under the Trump tax law. I could be wrong about that, but that's why they do it so much now. I will say, you make it sound like he's a crazy nobody. This is the sixth movie of his we've done. Because he directed Predator, he directed Die Hard, he directed Lax Action Hero, he directed The Thomas Crown Affair, 13th Warrior, and Rollerball. And he, on top of the movies we like, he also did The Hunt for the Red October, Die Hard with a Vengeance, and The Medicine Man. And if you haven't seen Medicine Man, that's the one where Sean Connery goes, "I found the cure for cancer, but I lost it." And he has a rat tail. And it's all of those things. And so he did 13 movies, or he did like 12 movies, 10 movies. Then he did Rollerball. Then he did Basic, and he hasn't worked since. So there you go.
So did he like want this movie to be more thoughtful and more like maybe what I haven't seen the 70s one, but maybe he like really wanted it to be like a commentary. And the other guy was like, no, just make it cool. Engines revving. And
yeah,
I mean, I will say what probably happened was, he got this movie script or whatever a decade earlier and was working on it, trying to make it. And in between, the movies were of declining quality. Because Last Action Hero, I like, but it bombed. A Die Hard with a Vengeance was not as good as the first one and didn't make as much money as they wanted. Thomas Crown Affair was well-reviewed, but kind of bombed. 13 Warrior bombed. And so I think the studio took it away from him because watching this, it feels cut to ribbons.
I think, according to the almighty Wikipedia, there was some sort of comment being re-edited because they thought the original form was too Asian or something. Of course, now with movie markets in the Far East being such a big deal, that's a good thing, but guess not in 2002.
Well, and I mean, I've seen Die Hard 1,000 times. It and Predator feel like somehow magic. Like, on paper, they shouldn't work, but watching them, they're incredible. But when you make a thinking piece like Hunt for Red October, you think he's got it. This, to me, feels like no one knew what the movie should be. And so at parts, it feels very ponderous, Hunt for Red October. Parts of it feel action-y. Parts of, like, and this guy can do both, but it feels like there was producers on either side yammering at him, and now he's out of Hollywood.
Well, the thing that I noticed, they made some very, very slight, weak attempts at some sort of commentary that I think even 20 plus years ago was pretty quaint. Like, you know, hey, you got to drink it again, Jonathan, you got to drink it again, label out for the television camera. I mean, even in 2002, the corporatization of sports and entertainment on TV, that it taken over by that point. So, I mean, they had that. I mean, just if that was supposed to be their little token commentary, it's quaint now. I think it was quaint 20 plus years ago.
And Jean Reno's like villain speech, he's like, oh, I don't own the mine, I own the man who owns the mine. So he's like some sort of post-Soviet oligarch,
right,
played by a Frenchman.
Low-key, this does remind me of just WWF, how it is now, how
a show, you
know, and things like that. He said no,
I said, like, the show, like, the like, showy aspect.
Yeah.
Because, like, I remember I had some family who lived in Dubai, and they were actually bringing, like, John Cena, the Budgies people, because they wanted to expand, they wanted to syndicate all that kind of stuff, and like, the marketing, like you said, about showing off the brands. That's what I kind of see, even to the point where, you know, it's funny, the announcer from the American side, he's actually in the WWE.
Right.
That's, you know, things being scripted and just, ugh. God, that first knockout on the red tee, that was pretty brutal.
Well, yeah, that was right. We haven't talked much about the movie per se.
Yeah, where are we in the movie right now? Because
we're 30 minutes into the podcast.
After Jonathan and LL Cool J have to get to Russia because the cops are all over Jonathan's apartment, four months later,
we smash cut to an entirely different season. Yeah. And now he is Jonathan, and he is the hero of a former Soviet Republic. Like, now, I kind of wished there was more of the actual game in this movie, because this part was fun. Yeah, so they've made a basketball or some nonsense.
That's too edgy for America, so it has to be done in, like, the former Soviet Union.
Well, that was the joke in the 2000s. Like, we're going to have this fight where someone fights a kangaroo, but it's going to be an international war. And now the Soviet Union, like, what was left of it? It's just former Soviet. Like, it's international waters. Like, we're going to go to Uzbekistan to watch this man box a gorilla. Like, all right. I mean, princes, of course, YouTube exists, so that stuff never dies. And back then, you had to exchange the tapes of snuff films. But, you know, this is what it is. And the other thing we should mention is in the top corner, and I know I'm gesturing to no one except for in this room, but there's a monitor that just says their market share, which is like the Nielsen box, which is incredible.
And yeah, the global like immediate rating everyone watching potentially. It's like if you had a rating. Twitch stream, you'd see how many viewers you had, but this is the same thing and that they somehow have.
And what they saw is when somebody would get hurt,
right,
the rating would go up. And they were like, oh, okay.
So you have evil Jean Reno and his sidekick, evil Naveen Andrews.
Has Jean Reno ever been a classic good guy? I don't think he has.
In The Professional,
he's kind of having a pretty intimate relationship with that 12-year-old. And he's an assassin.
The Da Vinci Code? No, he's a bad guy.
Maybe in Godzilla, although he does try and cover up the France's involvement in their nuclear lizard.
What were you saying, Noor?
Pink Panther. He's technically so he's a good guy there.
Congratulations, you're the first person to say, mention the Steve Martin Pink Panther in 5 years, so you've won the prize. I mean, and I will say,
Panther guy.
And I will mention here, in every movie that we've mentioned, I like Jean Reno. He just generally pays a shit heel or someone who's hiding something of one sort or another. And here he has a Fu Manchu mustache, which is a power move. And like all French actors, now that he's over 40, he's inflating like a hot air balloon. And I love it. He looks, the man is shaped roughly like a minion and is great. It's great. Like, there's no delineation between his head, his chin, his shoulders. And it's just like, I'm Jean Reno. I'm going to have sex with your women and drink all the wine. And I am playing a Russian this time. Which is just his French accent slightly lower because he didn't bother. Because it's 2002 and we've never heard of a Russian before. And I'm fine with it.
He was Russian in the movie?
I think so.
I think he was
His character's name is Alexei Petrovich.
Because we have the one guy...
This guy's always French.
Well, I mean, because for a bad guy, you need a Frenchman or an Englishman, as we've learned from Star Wars and everything since. And I like how a second in command is an Indian guy, but he has a British accent. So there we've got it. We've got it all. I think his name is Sanjay in this.
Sanjay. Yeah. Yes. Yeah. Evil Naveen Andrews.
Who's great.
Who didn't have...
Go ahead.
I was gonna say, he didn't have much to do in the first hour or so of the film, and I like Naveen Andrews from Lost. That's definitely the earliest thing that I've seen
Lost
him in.
When did Lost come out?
2004.
So this was
yeah,
before.
I was living in
out of the role.
Yeah, I was living in the Mary Linden dorm at UGA. I remember Lost was new.
Very good. Name check your dorm.
Yeah, oh, represent. Yeah. Go Dogs.
Your sophomore year. Your sophomore dorm. Well done. And then the rest of this is we get a whole bunch of these characters who are on the team. We don't get much from them. And in fact, in the credits,
we get something from one of them.
Aurora.
Aurora. Get them titties. Who
is self-conscious about her looks because she'll only have sex with them in dark saunas.
Well, we'll get there because she has a scar, right? At this point, she's Rebecca Romaine Stamos. She's still married to John Stamos at the time, which I get it. He's a good-looking piece of meat. We got the coach, Colt Olga, because that's as far as they thought. Hey, Russian. And then almost everyone else on the team is... like, there's a Korean actress who's in a bunch of stuff named Alice Poon. I didn't make that up. She's Red Seven. And she is... I mean, she's a stunt woman. Like, and so whenever she's in a role, it's an incredibly physical role.
Yeah.
But she's great. Like, they do a good job of filling out this cast with people who are very physical. And with the exception of Chris Klein, who, again, shouldn't do anything. The people around him, while he's mouth breathing, are acting like actors would. And then he's just like...
He is such a non-entity in this movie.
He is. Like, they literally could have had anyone. I mean, this is 2000. There's some, like, beefcakes they could have gotten. Like, and again, I mean, if you're choosing from the cast of American Pie, get Stifler. At least
Stifler. I would have taken Jason Biggs. I would have taken the guy who played Shitbreak. I mean, anyone else. I mean, my goodness, Chris Klein.
You think they wanted to get Keanu Reeves?
That would have been great.
I know Rollerball.
Chris Klein is such a poor man's Keanu Reeves. Look at that face. Legit. Look at the floppy hair.
Although, unfortunately, this is 2 years after The Matrix, and so Keanu Reeves would have cost the entire budget. Now, the problem is, if you cost the entire budget, the movie would have made money. This clearly, like, because again, the problem is, we've come across this 1,000 times on this podcast. Bad movies can be saved by charismatic actors. And case in point, we're going to, tonight, as we're recording, we're going to do a Schwarzenegger picture. It's a bad Schwarzenegger movie. But guess what? When he's on screen, I'm just like, now what's Arnold going to do? How is he going to get out of this script? I don't care it. I would have taken Eugene Levy in the main role. Like,
yeah, after
Nebuchadnezzar is around this entire...
After the events of Splash, he had to flee the country and went to a Soviet prison and got hard. And got hard as hell, and now he's a skater.
Oh, that's interesting. Yeah, I would imagine him doing this sort of in like a slapstick way where everything is by accident, but he just manages to, you know, slip through and beat people.
Or maybe...
But it's all unintentional. He's like, oh, excuse me, sorry.
Or maybe he just shows up with a bunch of Eastern Promises Russian jail tattoos and just kills everybody.
Now,
well, funny you say that, because that does happen in this movie.
It does. Now, Aurora, I'm going to try to have intercourse with you, and oh, boy! Look at those.
There's the weird scene in the movie when they try to escape, because they realize that they're in trouble, that they're going to get killed or something.
LL Cool J... nearly, he gets a spinal injury after being flipped over the wall or something.
Yeah. So they decide to get away. And then I wasn't sure if my phone messed up.
No, the entire scene was shot in night vision.
It was. So just to fill in the plot at this point, you mentioned the scene already. What's his name? Puya?
Who?
The buddy who nearly dies.
Oh, Toba?
Toba. Okay, so what happens is his helmet sloughs off. When something happens...
It was cut. They cut the chin strap.
Yeah.
That's what triggers this, right? So the helmet kind of falls away, and then he gets hit with the golden snitch right across the face. And at what... They go to this, like, this crazy... And you know, for Daniel, who will listen to this, but pretend to, it's like from the movie Brazil or something. Like, it's this weird future bar where women are just walking around topless. One is wearing a Soviet uniform with holes cut out for her boobs. She's serving drink. Like, this scene is out of, again, this is out of a 70s sci-fi movie, not this movie. But someone hands him the helmet and he finds that the straps have been slashed. And so this is when he goes to his buddy Marcus, LL Cool J, and says, they're trying to kill us for ratings. Then we see that the next person to try to get hit is Jonathan Cross, because he goes to Petrovich, Jean Renault, and says, I think they're trying to kill us. And what happens is, and again, breathing through his mouth the whole time, they're trying to kill us. And he goes, I will look into this because that the moose and squirrel are at my tail. And then they're like, the next person to die has to be Jonathan Cross. And then when they do literally just say like, well, I guess we have to fucking kill him. That's when they decide to make a break. And LL Cool J gets his neck injury, his traumatic brain injury, literally saving Cross's life. And so then they, and then the movie goes to green, to Night Vision.
It's really weird. I was like, maybe my phone just messed up. I don't know. But it turned green. And then there was something that I just feel like needs to be mentioned. It's at 1 hour and 2 minutes. So it's after they're riding this motorcycle, which I actually enjoyed the scene of them riding the motorcycle together. And they're kind of talking to each other about how fast it's, like, you can see their friendship, you know, like, I like that scene. But then something chasing them, and then it catches up to them, and they find out it's some sort of like helicopter plane hybrid thing. I don't know what those are called.
Oh, it's sci-fi nonsense. You're
so
fine.
So it lands, and then at 1 hour and 2 minutes in the movie, there is a giant cartoon boing sound.
Yes, two of them.
Two of them.
I noted it,
and I was like,
COVID in my head.
Nope. As out of place as it possibly could be.
Or scroll backward, or whatever kids are saying these days. But I had to go, but because I heard the boing, and I was like,
that truck up.
I put the thing on and flipped it in and reversed it. And
I was just like, what the fuck hell is this? And again, this is like what we did Hard Target 1 million years ago. And I was like, they must have locked the director out of the editing bay, because like John McTiernan, they haven't, and again it's McTiernan, they even did a yippee-ki-yay joke.
Yeah.
As for Die Hard, and then I'm like, no, there's no way that Bruce Willis would have allowed a boy, like I lost my mind.
There was a Foley artist watching this scene, and he was like, I have just the sound. Like, and I don't even know what was supposed to be happening, because it's black and green, and you can't see the shot.
Well, I mean, and again, she is properly describing it, but in a way that makes it sound fun and entertaining. This scene lasts for 15 goddamn minutes. And what it was essentially a sound. If you were the Foley guy, it would be stretching a string like a guitar string and cutting it. It would be a ping. But this is like all of a sudden
heavy machinery, like a
all of a sudden it's R.I.P. Paul Rubens, it's Pee Wee Herman, just like it's a spring. It's the most out of, and this movie, and by the way, this movie is not funny in any way. This is not a comedy. We're having a lark because I like you people. But if I watched this for no reason, I would have turned it off 5 minutes.
You mean like how I watched
it? It's funny when it gets absurd. It's funny when it gets absurd. Like when the beginning of the movie, that dude goes to the window of the Chinese restaurant.
You're talking 3 minutes into an almost 2 hour movie. Like,
I feel so validated that you guys didn't notice the boing.
Do you think the aircraft was a Boeing?
Maybe they were a sponsor, and you know what, maybe it was written on the side of the plane, but they were like, hey guys, sorry, we filmed it in pitch black so we can't see it, but don't worry, we're gonna put it in post.
It was blue from Tailspin. It was just like all of a sudden. But I mean, and then after two boing sound effects, they're like, bro, we're trying to lighten the scene because it's about to get dark. What could you possibly mean? And then within visual distance of the border, LL gets two to the brain. I mean,
they let him try to jump the bridge, the drawbridge that's opening, because John Rowe is like, magnificent. And then they snipe him.
Yeah, like, do you think he'll make it? I don't know. I think he'll make it. And then, pow. Then he goes down like Kennedy. And then we have the border. And by the way, the border crossers, the border guards,
they don't saunter over. Yeah.
They're used to it.
They're mentioned as having been paid off, I think.
Yeah, and
he says tip them well.
I thought they were just going to toss like a bag of cash out of the plane thing.
Well, you know what? At this point, after a boing sound effect, if he was just Mario Kart and all of his coins flew out and they just collected them, bling, 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 like, that's it.
Yeah, because the team had given them money to escape with. So if he, like, went flying, all the dollar bills went everywhere, that would actually work.
That is an unceremonious ending for Marcus and LL in this movie. That was
it's strange.
Just he's gone. Chris, Jonathan Cross doesn't seem too broken up about it. He just sort of soldiers on.
It's just you're right. You know, like it would have almost been more if he was nearby and just grabbed him, like cradle your buddy, like as he's like. If you want dramatic effect, and part of it must have been they told McTiernan, make us die hard, because Bruce Willis is nowhere near any of the people he knows as they get shot, and it's supposed to be more, like, that's the only thing I can think of, but they're teammates, damn it. It would be interesting if they were there. It
sounds like they knew each other from before, because LL Cool J is the one who pulls him into his little SUV off his luge when the cops are after them.
That's right. I mean, I think you're right. But we don't get much of that, right? I mean, you're right. They set the table, but we should have a picture. It's so simple. Here's how you fix it. The next fight, Chris Klein is at his locker, and he opens it up, and there's the two of them on the football team together. They're wearing their pads. They're holding the helmets. They've known each other for years, clearly. Or what is he supposed to be, in hockey?
He was about to go to the NHL tryouts in 3 months, which is a really legit way for, you know, just people to just make the National Hockey League to just go to the NHL tryouts. It sounds like he was on his way.
Could you imagine if he was next to Gordon Bombay and it was it's Mighty Ducks. It's between 1 and 2 when he goes out and tries out. And it's just Chris Klein. He's a
one that's about Gordon Bombay's knee.
Because he did. Chris Klein was the guy who took out his knee. That's exactly it.
Mighty Ducks 2.5. You know, Gordon Bombay goes to Ukraine.
But I mean, even if it was a thing where the reason why LL Cool J says I'm, because the line is weird. He's like, it's like in the old days where I'm the one breaking up the thing so that you can score. That which means that LL Cool J used to play hockey.
Right. Yeah. You run and I'll block. Just back in the old days. I think he said at the beginning of the movie.
Uh-huh.
Which I mean, I guess, but. LL Cool J's on a motorcycle, so his skating days, I guess, are behind him. But when you say run and block, I'm thinking
I was football. Thinking football. The backstory is so thin, and it's just hard to tell. I was trying to piece it together.
Well, okay, so but we have rollerblades, luges,
football, hockey. And hockey. This guy's a quadruple threat. Chris Klein, my goodness.
And an actor almost?
Oh, yeah.
I mean, he lists that fourth on the resume, but still...
can do everything but act.
So what's a spine protector? Is that what they were calling, like?
Yeah, okay, so there are pads that go on the shoulders and then down the back, which it looked like practically, in practical effects term, like he's wearing catcher's gear backwards, right? Now, that being said, fine, he doesn't want to wear it for some reason.
Speed. He wants it. He says something like, they'll have to catch me before they can break my
brain. My brain. Fine. That's like, okay, so this, Alex probably knows, it wasn't until the mid-80s that you were required to wear a baseball helmet. But if you played the game beforehand, you didn't have to wear a helmet. So even in the early 90s, you'd occasionally see some old guy show up at the plate where...
Yeah, hockey too, yeah.
Yeah, where someone like... Roger Clemens is pitching 100 miles an hour and these assholes aren't wearing helmets. And so that must be what it is. He's like, I don't want to wear the gear. No. You will die. And that's the one piece of advice that LL Cool J says emphatically, which he's right about. The whole point of this game, people are like, brava, when someone gets paralyzed.
Because in the way to the climax of the movie, homeboy gets just ripped to bits. Like he's bleeding everywhere. Protective gear would be nice.
The last act of this, it's a different movie. And a movie, if you wanted to make it this, you should make it the whole movie. Because you could tell the whole story up to this point in the first 20 minutes, and they don't. Because if this was, again, a basketball movie, a baseball movie, anything, you would make the last half, solid half hour, the one game. They don't. They spend so little time on what we want to see. Like... The Mighty Ducks have to lose to the Icelandic team twice in that second movie. And, like, here, we don't establish shit other than that they're wearing, like, Vanderbilt's colors, which is kind of funny, the black and the gold, which, again, I get.
And it's like the quarterfinals, right?
Yeah.
It's the quarterfinals.
So the stakes are genre now, after recapturing him, is like, I just need you for the championship game, because it sounds like he's about to get a cable deal or something. And then I'll give you all the money in the world. And he's like, I want a percentage, which actually one of the original endings of the movie was that he actually ended up getting a percentage of the league.
Wait, was this a choose your own adventure story?
It was I don't know. It was an ending they didn't use, and as opposed to the kind of stupid ending we have where
you saying that tells you all you need to know. With a good movie, there's one way that it can resolve, but at this point, they just throw up their hands and just say, fuck it, we'll film three different versions. Like, because that's what this screams.
Well, yeah, Jonathan goes from being just totally naive to the entire thing to playing hardball with the former KGB strongman saying, I want a cut.
That scene was a pretty quick transition for him. His friend just got killed, and then he's like, so can you get rid of the girl? She's really bothered, craving my thought.
Well, he's playing him. He's trying to talk tough. But I mean, of course, Petrovich is obsessed with getting a North American cable deal by showing things where people are literally dying on live television. I know we're supposed to suspend some disbelief here, but is that going to be like something he puts in the marketing materials and the reel, the sizzle reel?
I think
for my league, there's a ton of people dying.
I think at this point he's starting to lose it, because at the end, when like, this game, there'll be no rules, and all the other owners like, what the hell is he talking about?
No rules.
So he's just right. He just goes insane, basically.
This episode is sponsored by Outback Steakhouse. No rules, just right.
I only hear Gru. Like, that's all I hear. That's all I heard when he spoke in the movie, too.
But I mean, again, this is 2023 as we're recording. That means in 2026, what's the worst thing on TV? Like, I mean, there's a lot of bad shit on TV, but no one watches it anymore. But it would be like, Lifetime has gone to full pornography. Like, because it's 3 years from now. That's all it is. And, like, the idea that, like...
The Hallmark Channel has gone insane.
Right. Because, like, again, 3 years in the future, something has gone crazy between 2002 and 2005. And we're now okay with just... It'd be great to watch people being paralyzed. And here's the thing. Alex and I were talking before this. Last year, we saw Tua, like, nearly get paralyzed. And we saw a guy have a heart attack on the field and nearly drop dead during football. And guess what? Everyone stopped and said, should we even be watching football?
Right.
Yeah.
We didn't say, you know what? I need more of seeing people like grasping to breathe or being paralyzed. Like, no, everyone was like, holy shit, what is happening?
Or as Petrovich said, I need the photos and resumes of the replacements after he declared the no rules game in the quarterfinals.
Yeah, because
we need the replacements.
Because it sounds like obviously he wanted Jonathan dead. Maybe he was trying to do it. It was a little purge going, because the Yellow Jackets are all given shovels.
Right. Dude.
It turns into a murder fest.
I mean, okay, so after everything happens, we have one more game, which again doesn't take enough time, but we all decide to show up, which is strange. You'd think some of the players are like, I wouldn't want to die. But we have the Vanderbilt team that I made fun of earlier. And we have our red team, which again, I'm shocked that this wasn't sued by George Lucas for having players like Red 5, Red 3, Red 7. But that's just me, because he sues everyone for everything. But they declare that for this quarterfinal match, the rules committee has decided there will be no rules, because it's the quarterfinals and you can just change that way through a season. Whatever. This becomes a bloodbath. On purpose, that's the point. They start beating the crap out of Jonathan immediately, and then the rest of it is him finding the power deep within his acting quiver and riding back to win the game.
It turns into friggin' Spartacus.
It's funny you mention that, because he technically is the protagonist, because he grows as a character. Because in the first game, he doesn't want to pass the ball and score on his own, but this time... he passes the ball. So that's just character growth.
No bogarting this.
Well, he can't kill as many people when he's holding the ball.
That's true.
Like, so,
like, one dude climbs up on the partition and starts yelling about how they're being killed for ratings, and this dude with like a North Korean military hat just shoots him, and all the miners just start going after the KGB guys.
Yes, and because he's supposed to be the miner who made good. He's a local boy who did good. And, you know, sports reporter here, but, like, that's something that they always hype. Like, the guy who played at the local high school who's now made the professional team, you root for him. That's what you hype. Those are the jerseys that you see the most, right? Like, and so he's the guy who's like, you know what? This is total shit that you're killing us. And he jumps into the crowd, and then the Gestapo comes out and shoots him. And people are like,
yeah, and then so basically we already see some rioting earlier in the movie, but then the full-blown Euromaidan breaks out.
Jonathan, then we get the slow chant,
and then he throws a shot putt through the into the owner's box and nearly kills Jean Renault, who then runs off to get a gun. And
this movie refuses to end, so
it turns out that Sanjay has set up Jean Renault because he's got like the keys to the gun locker, and he's trying to seduce Jonathan to the dark side or something. Like,
I think
you don't kill a tyrant unless you make a deal with his successor. And then
you're talking about stuff that has not been set up, so we should set the table a little bit here. The game is bloody as hell. People are dying, and like we said, they kill a guy, and once that guy gets killed, it goes absolutely batshit. We have essentially a soccer hooligan riot in the crowd. And at that point, the game is done. And both teams decide to be on the same side, right?
They all hate the owner is going to kill him.
Well, but this is kind of what... this is just what I imagine, the current head of MLB is Bob Manfred. But this is what I think they think the owners think strikes are. Like, just a bunch of rap, like, beefcakes, like... And the owners are like, oh no, my billions. But that's kind of what's going on here. Meanwhile,
I just remember one of the Gold Girls chasing down a KGB guy on skates and breaking his neck.
You keep saying kids. I mean, first of all, you're right. Awesome. It's not even KGB. I think it's the private security force. Again, this
Bulgarian
would be like
Bulgarian weightlifters from the Cold War who need new jobs.
But this would be like, again, this is a broadcaster. So it'd be like if Rupert Murdoch sent like Fox News commentators after people. Like, this is his employees, right? It's just,
that sounds like it might be a good movie.
Dude, could you imagine if like Turner versus Murdoch and they're like invading each other's property like it's Risk, but it's just Wolf Blitzer with a gun? Like, and Hannity shoots, but he's like a foot and a half taller than Blitzer, so he misses. Like, that's what we're talking about.
Bill O'Reilly turns like an Irish Rage Hulk.
And then he just starts blowing rails. But there we are. But the end of it stepped on everyone just then. The end of this, though, is just a different movie. Because after you said he throws a ball through these described as like 10-pound like metal balls or whatever these are, through the spectator box that Renault is in, Petrovich is in, and then he himself jumps in and starts chasing after Renault, and then for the last 15 minutes, it's just cat and mouse. It's a strange choice.
While, like, the revolution breaks out everywhere, like I said, it's a Euromaidan. Is Jean Renault, like, Viktor Yankovic or whatever the pro-Russian president of Ukraine was?
Got me swinging. But I mean, yeah, I mean, what it is it's supposed to be. And again, I'm referencing this now, and I haven't seen the 70s one in 25 years. But this is the end of Running Man, where Arnold like overthrows the corporation, kills the head of the company, which did happen in the 80s. So I don't know who's ripping off who, ripping off what. But that also takes much less time. Because here they're chasing each other, and then Jean Renault has a shotgun locker at a stadium, one of 13 that this place is played at.
And Jonathan takes a shotgun blast on the top of a bar stool.
Oh, I will say, I do like that scene. So Jean Renault can't get the gun out, can't find his keys, so he puts a cartridge into the shotgun, but leaves it mounted through the protection barrel, and so he pumps it into the wall so it shoots but misses. Chris Klein breathes heavily enough that the man dies. And then Sanjay comes in and goes, oh, you should have agreed with me beforehand, because now there's going to be a vacuum of power, and now I have a gun. And Chris Klein just shotguns him.
By the way, I saw that there's apparently a goof in the movie.
Could
that
you imagine?
When
this nice tight narrative.
When he shoots him and he kind of falls backward over, it's like a bar with like a glass thing behind him, shelves and stuff. There's like a concrete like cinder block wall, and it wobbles when he falls backward.
That's amazing. That's amazing, because I'm sure what he just had was like a vest on, and they pulled him back right as he like jumped back, and the idea that it goes whoop.
Yeah.
And then Chris Klein walks out and says, I will go to a fair sport and I will become the commissioner of football. And then I'm going to be the head of FIFA. And then everything and nothing bad ever happened again.
Well, there's a callback that he's talking to Aurora. Why do we always have sex in weird places, never in a bed? And she's like, first we get you to a hospital, then we get to my bed. Like, they're in the back of a truck being driven by the miners in the middle of a civil war.
They're all very, priorities, like, people. Beaten up.
Yeah. That's right. And like you mentioned, we have a whole bunch of commentators here, including our random musical guests, right? We have Slipknot at one point. We have Pink at one point.
He just shows up on screens throughout the movie for some reason. You've got a couple Rob Zombie songs. It's time.
Yeah, and Shane McMahon, the son of Vince McMahon, is in this too. Yeah, he's one of the dudes. And Paul Heyman shows up as, again, he's just the guy from WWE who's like, oh my God, he's got a chair, which we get in this. Effectively, like, it's the same character. He's like, he explains the rules, and he's just hyping up about it. Oh, that didn't look like a good hit. Oh, he's dead. Not great. Well, there you go. Anyone have any final thoughts before we do final thoughts? Nor, why don't you take us home?
Rewatching it now as an adult, I can see why they would want to market this after the high octane movies like Mission Impossible 2, Triple X, and of course Fast and Furious. But I think they focused on the wrong things that made those movies so magical, or they just basically just did a generic version of all those movies put together and gave us generic characters. So you have the main character who's a Keanu Reeves lookalike, LL Cool J, the black best friend, and of course the Mystique, the female interest, and then the main villain, Muppet. It's funny, and actually, while we were you guys were talking about the little boing noise. I was rewatching it on my phone. They actually went through a barbed wire. I guess the play went through barbed wire.
Oh, thank you, because like I was like, this is just black. I don't know what's happening.
Right. So like I was on my phone, like
you were trying to find the boing.
I was watching it, so I watched this. I put on a projector in my room, so I was in black and white. And I barely see anything, anyways. I feel as if like I really want to see this movie, like the true original version of this movie, because I think it can. Not I'm saying it was a masterpiece, but it definitely better than what.
Fair. Alex, what do you think?
I think what I would have wanted to see from the movie is that they could have built some drama and some suspense in the actual games if the action in the games made any sort of sense at all. So there's people going through tubes. There's motorcycles going around the thing. Every so often, someone goes up in the air and throws the ball. I don't know what the score is. I don't know what's going on. Logistically, the games make no sense. I don't care about the outcome of the actual matchup. If they could have somehow made it visually make sense or sort of brought us through the actual sports action, I mean, I would have appreciated some actual drama if you could have understood it but they just made it so you couldn't. And I mean, that was part of the joke, but that's, it was just mindless action in the weird cycle drone thing, whatever they competed.
Well, and just to your point, that would have been fine if it was a baseball movie and people kind of know the rules. But if you have no idea what's happening, you can't pretend.
They made it supposed to not make sense. I get that, but it's just like, come on.
That's right.
Miss.
Giga.
I agree with that. Well, like, we all kind of understand Quidditch. Quidditch is a fake made-up game. We care about Quidditch.
This has iron
snitch.
So maybe,
like, what's the difference?
Motorcycles.
I feel like I like post-apocalyptic movies. I like movies where people are put into, social experiment kind of. Like the premise, I like. The execution, I'm not, like, totally crazy about. I feel like what you said, Nick, about it being kind of disjointed makes sense because, like, nothing is sort of explained. Like, you don't really care. I thought that the two main guy buddies, I liked their friendship, but that's really the only, like, relationship that I cared about in the movie was their friendship. So I would say watch the hour and 2 minute mark to experience the boing that we now know is a cable breaking.
You gotta experience the boing.
You gotta feel the boing. And then, other than that, see if you can get the soundtrack on Spotify, because, like, that's really cool, you know? If you went to high school in the 2000s, you'll probably appreciate that. But I cannot recommend people, like, watch this movie. Sorry.
Based on conversation we've had here, it seems like there are a number of missed opportunities to make it better. This is fun in kind of a stupid way. It's one of those movies I guess see once because there's no reason to see it again.
I would have turned it off if we didn't have to watch it. I'm going to go just back to what Nor said and just throw it out this way. All of you are right because they couldn't decide what this movie was going to be. Right? Like, it knows that there's a lot of missed opportunities. If they had picked any of them, if they had focused on the fact that this is a weird sport and that this is a dude who wants to get out of it, that would have been fine. If they focused on the fact that it was a corporation and that these people don't matter, that would have been fine. They just couldn't decide what movie they wanted to do. They tried to make them all. And then what happened was, through what I imagine was like a 3.5 hour original cut, they edited it down to nothing. This movie feels like it has no weight.
Yeah, the unrated director's cut, more nudity, more bone crunching, and more politics.
I mean, you know what? That would have been something. I mean, and again, I'm having a lark when you say that, but at the same time, yeah, fine. If it's going to be about how, like, Rebecca Romaine Stamos is, like, in love with this dude, Aurora's in love with this dude, and he's too obsessed with the game, and then people start dying, and he has to choose between escaping with her and winning the final match, that's still a movie. This does not add up to a movie. And that's the only place where I'll disagree with Matt, which is that I don't even think you should see it once. I'm with Noor. If I was still 12.
Yeah, unless you're a 10-year-old kid.
Like this,
yeah,
this,
watch it.
There's titties for no reason.
But also, don't listen to this podcast.
No, don't. But it's just appropriate that last week we did Mighty Ducks 3 because, like, that's the worse and yet better version of this because it's still tighter. It's somehow tighter. However, we are out of time. I will drop it here since you're listening, but next week we're going to go in a completely different direction. We are going to do an animated movie where dinosaurs come to Earth. We're doing We're Back, which is, again, a slice of childhood, just a different one. And followed by The Rocketeer. Followed by The Rocketeer. So thanks for listening. Thanks for doing all you do to keep us on the charts. Thanks for sharing us with friends and reviewing us. Please give us more reviews. We could always use more reviews because when you review us, wherever you get us, Spotify, Apple, Google, Android, however you get it, when you review us, it moves us up the charts. They keep track of new reviews. So thanks for doing that. Bye. I'm hungry.
You've ruined the podcast.
Myopia Movies is a podcast production of Dude Letter Podcasting and is produced by Nick Hoffman. It is edited by Nur Trinette and Daniel Suttis and is hosted by Nick Hoffman. with production assistance by Matthew Quinn, Daniel Suttis, and Nertronet. The theme song is Surf Shimmy by Kevin MacLeod from incomptech.com. Licensed under the Creative Commons by Attribution 4 license, Creative Commons/licenses by /4.0. Thanks.